Good evening, everybody. This is James McCanny with my Science Hour for July 4th, 2019, and a very interesting 4th of July this year for many reasons. I'm going to talk about space radiation as the main science topic. It's something that actually affects all of us, but there's some interesting, research that's going on right now. But I'll be talking about that as the main science topic. I'll also be talking about electrical power companies, something that is nearer and dearer to all of us. When you turn on the switch, you turn on the hairdryer, you turn on the television, you turn on just about anything, our lives are integrally involved in the electric power company. And it's something that is an essential, it's a very essential commodity, just like telephone. I mean, how would we exist without the modern telephone? A lot depends on that, a lot of modern life, as you call it. Back in the old days, people would write a letter, and it might take months, in some cases years, for that letter to reach its destination. You know, and after, I mean, people could have died in the meantime while the letter was being sent. But now we have a world of instant communication with 5G coming. Very interesting. They want the hubs. This is one of the issues with 5G is you don't have a hub. Like in 4G, you have a hub every many miles. You could have a hub for 4G that's 15 miles away, up on the side of a mountain, and it covers an entire region with 4G telephone, what we're currently using. But with 5G, the expectation is that these telephones will be reading your mind, literally. They will be watching for signals from your eyes. You can run them by just looking at them. But part of this is that there has to be absolutely instant communication, almost as if it were part of the human neural network, which it's going to be. And by the way, talking about AI, artificial intelligence, being built into these phones, there's some real dangers. I'm not going to be talking about that. But the issue is that instant communications is on the doorstep. But the problem is that these towers are going to be placed every mile. And they're going to be very powerful. So we're just going to be immersed, absolutely immersed in high-frequency electromagnetic radiation. It's going to be a part of life, very damaging, etc. But technology is moving forward. Elon Musk has seen fit to launch satellites, and they're putting up 60 at a time, 60 satellites at a shot, and there might be more coming in the future per launch, but they're trying to get some of these technologies are trying to get as many as 12,000 satellites in low Earth orbit transmitting 5G signals. So you're just never more than a light second away from your communication. Anyway, that's an issue, but I want to switch here to power companies. Wow. This is very scary, and nobody's talking about it. I'm working on compiling a lot of information in the background on this particular topic. But here's an example. This is just one example. Georgia Power Company in Georgia is basically near bankruptcy. They're asking the Public Utility Commission, in Georgia it's called something else. The standard name is, in the English vernacular, is PUC, Public Utility Commission. But the equivalent of the Georgia, state of Georgia, PUC, is being requested by a power company in Georgia for basically $1 billion increase in rates over the next 3 years, and to be exact, $942 million. If you're splitting hairs, only a smite $58 million away from a billion. So they're asking for this money because they say of it's because of storm damage and increased costs. But here's the catch. The state of Georgia legislature has stepped up and like the kind of the big guy on the block that wants to pound his chest, they have voted to put in massive amounts of solar panels. And guess what? It just turns out that the amount of money they're going to spend in the next 3 years on solar panels just about equals $942 million. So this is what does this tell you? That means that there's going to be an expense, an unrecoverable expense being put out by this power company in Georgia for solar panels, and they're trying to hide it. They're trying. It's like a slip slide. It's like, say, you know, you're paying your bills, and you don't want somebody to know about you paying a certain bill, and so you show an increase in some other area, but the increase is really due to something over here. It's called the slip slide. And so this is going to be happening. Florida, for example, the governor of Florida wanted to put in, 30 million solar panels. And these people are so stupid. If you've ever been in Florida, which I have a lot, I've been in Florida, and you don't even have to go there to know that it's very humid in Florida. In the wintertime, it can be a bit drier. But on even a nice clear winter day, by 10 in the morning, the clouds are up in the sky, building, and especially in the summertime, you cannot get past 9 o'clock in the morning without clouds in the sky. So solar in Florida would be the equivalent of putting, it'd be the equivalent of putting an ice cream stand at the North Pole. You're probably not going to have too many customers. It's not a good idea. And by the way, I just throw this in since I mentioned North Pole. I got an email from somebody claiming that there's a secret war going on between the United States and other countries and Russia, where Putin has kind of like the one of those James Bond movies where a guy wants to rule the whole world. Well, it is claimed that Putin has a secret plan to occupy the North Pole because of all of its vast resources. Well, I got news for you. Unless you're looking for ice, there's not a lot at the North Pole. The North Pole is a floating iceberg. There's nothing underneath it except ocean. There's no land there. The pole that has land under it is the South Pole. So, I'm not sure what people are smoking. I have seen so much crazy misinformation come out in the last week. You know, they're talking about submarines being sunk, and they're talking about inevitability of war over the North Pole and all of its rich resources. It's just becoming bizarre, and people are repeating this. That's the problem, because, a lot of people, especially in the United States, don't know that there's nothing under the North Pole. There are no valuable resources. There's not even whales there. There might be some fish. I wouldn't call that valuable resources, because you can find fish in the rest of the ocean. There's nothing under the North Pole. I don't know how much more clearly I can state that. Okay, well, back to this Georgia Power Company. The push to put solar in a lot of places is absolutely ridiculous. Solar does not work even in good places. The cost versus the benefit is just not there. The solar panels, this is one thing that's happening. More and more people are starting to wake up to this, and more people are starting to write about this. I've been talking about this for, certainly a couple decades, let's put it that way. I was talking in the early 1990s. I was talking about the up-and-coming green, or the use of green in the advertising for products, and of course eventually in the politics. But I was also talking about the the greenhouse effect, the alleged greenhouse effect. And a couple of shows ago, I went into the 10 top reasons why the greenhouse doesn't work. I can add one right now, relative to the global climate craziness that's going on. First of all, you don't use temperature as a measure of global warming. Heat and temperature in thermodynamics, in real science, are different. They're very different things. Heat is different than temperature. Very different. They're very different measurements. They're related in a given situation. But here's the thing. The temperatures that scientists or the phony scientists in this movement, the phony scientists are taking temperature measurements at locations that are either at the airport where you have a lot of cement. It's well known that the temperature at the airport or downtown, let's say at the building downtown where one of the TV networks is stationed and has their weather equipment up on the roof, well, gee, that because of all the cement in town for winter and summer, you're going to have a temperature that's between 5 and 10 degrees warmer than out in the countryside, where the most of the world is countryside, and physically very little of the world is city. So they're taking the temperature and then averaging it over the whole world, which is false data. The reason there's more heat in the city, its heat content, is because of the large amount of cement that's there. And so in the wintertime, in the summertime, all times of year, the temperature that you measure, which is one of the factors in heat content has to do with the amount of matter, the kind of matter, the availability of that matter to the atmosphere, etc. And then the temperature is just one of the measurements. There's also humidity. There's many other factors that influence the temperature. But the end result is that the temperature that they're recording is at peak temperature locations in the city at the airport. And if you go 5 miles away, the temperature drops 5 degrees. So it's false data. They're recording and producing basically false data. And heat is the thing you have to be measuring. That's very difficult to do because heat has, you have to take into account the type of matter, the availability to the atmosphere, the heat content. When you have clouds, there's more heat content in the atmosphere than when there are no clouds, etc. All of these have to be taken into account, and they're not. All they're doing, these fake scientists, are sticking the thermometer out the window and creating science fear, science porn fear. Fear porn is what we call it. In the real science world, global climate change people, they don't really like to say it. They're still talking about global warming, but it's a fabrication. I heard a guy talk about how the South Pole was melting. Well, yeah, in the summertime when the scientists are there, it's melting. Yes, it does. And it has been for the last many, many thousands of years. Anyway, I'm not going to go into that again tonight. But getting back to this company in Georgia, putting vast amounts of solar panels in that will not return, will not have any effect on return in capital, because they simply don't work. And they subtly know this, but they're already planning on billing the consumer nearly $1 billion over the next 3 years to put in something that does not work. I'm going to take a little segue here and talk about crazy stuff going on in space. A guy named Brian May, who's in charge of an asteroid deflection experiment. These people are idiots. There's an asteroid that has another little asteroid orbiting it. And they're going to try and come in at high velocity and hit this orbiting asteroid. Now, for one, these objects are spinning on their axis. And so you really cannot, there's not enough data. I guarantee you they don't have enough data to accurately model when this satellite coming in is going to hit this orbiting asteroid. And the idea is to move it out of its orbit. And it actually is a potential Earth-threatening asteroid, but not really. It's not one that is high on the list. But they could make it into one by actually hitting this the wrong way, by hitting it on the side, by this asteroid coming around, being in a different position where they hit it, hitting it at the edge, etc. They could actually deflect this so it hits the Earth because they're idiots. So anyway, crazy stuff going on in outer space. I already mentioned Elon Musk intentionally launching 12,000 5G satellites that are going to irradiate every sector of the Earth, whether you have a 5G phone or not, whether you like it or not. You're going to be irradiated with 5G radiation. The entire world is going to be subjected to this. Not only, which I mentioned before, that each one of these satellites has a light on it, and isn't that special? They're going to light up the sky with artificial satellites. Whew. Okay, next on the list of crazy stuff going on in space, NASA on the International Space Station has recognized that there is a mold growing there. And it's not only growing inside the spacecraft, but it's growing in crooks and crannies outside the spacecraft. So it's subjected to space radiation and the environment of space, which is basically vacuum, and they cannot kill this, whatever it is. And they got people going up and down, back and forth to that thing, bringing it back. There was a movie. What the heck was that movie back in the, might have been in the 60s. And it was about people going into space and bringing back a space virus that then came and basically attacked, killed everybody on planet Earth. And NASA has terrible, terrible clean room conditions. When they send a mission to Mars, one of the landers or probes, those things are contaminating the planet Mars with bacteria from Earth. Mars used to be separate. The same thing when they're doing discovery work in Antarctica, for example. Something that's been totally isolated from human populations for thousands and thousands of years, they're going down there and contaminating it. Without, you know, these people are complete idiots. here's another crazy, crazy stuff going on in space. NASA has proclaimed the alleged Apollo landing sites off limits. In other words, you're not supposed to go there. Well, the only problem is the United States doesn't own the moon. And there's international law saying that the moon is available for all people on planet Earth. So the idea that NASA wants to cordon off anybody from going near these landing sites tells me something else is going on. And just the last thing, the crazy stuff going on in space, it's not even going on in space. NASA has created vast amounts of footage recreating the Apollo program, and they actually admit it. They just had a film come out where they took all of the old Apollo era equipment, and remember, if you were alive then, it was like the control room. We have a problem, Houston. The control room, and they rebuilt it complete with screens and artificial graphics and everything to make it look official, and then dressed people in 1960s shirts and ties, etc., gave them ashtrays, which I guarantee you wouldn't see today in any place, but they've recreated the Apollo 11 mission. And the reason they had to do this was because they don't have any footage of the real Apollo mission, if it was real, whatever. But yeah, there were a lot of people there. Probably you know somebody, or you might have had a grandfather or uncle or great uncle or somebody who worked there. and were part of the moon program. But just remember, very, very few people were really privy to what was going on and, in a sense, not going on. So, by the way, I was on John Moore's show yesterday morning, and John always has a prepper tip of the day. So, but I gave out the prepper tip of the day that you have to go buy your hip boots real soon, because the crapola that you are going to have to wade through over the next couple weeks as we approach the alleged 50th anniversary of the alleged Apollo alleged moon landing is going to get pretty deep. So you need some hip boots. So I suggest you get there first so you get the highest ones possible. Here's something. A person approached me a number of some time ago. I've been working with this person. In fact, it's very interesting. The way I met this guy was decades ago when there was a group came out and started copying my work, wholesale copying it, and claimed that they had 30 years of experience in the electric universe. Well, of course, that was all hocus pocus. But anyway, Mark came along and wrote to them and said, okay, you're making this claim. Where is your previous publications? And of course, they didn't have any. And so Mark stepped in at that time as a neutral person, basically stating the obvious that they don't have any previous material published. And so, giving me priority, of course, with the creation of the concept of electric universe, etc. But anyway, over the years, Mark and I have communicated and recently have collaborated on some work, and he has done some amazing original work on this topic. And so I'm going to make a little announcement here. Literally, I never post work from other people on my page, but I made an exception for this time. Mark approached me and he said he wants his work to be made public. I won't give all the reasons in the background, but basically I agreed. And so here's the basic idea. And this goes back, a number of people have suggested throughout history that there could have been a pole shift, a physical pole shift of planet Earth. And of course, Velikovsky talked about this. A guy named Hapgood talked about this. And Hapgood actually gave some estimates based on some, well, you can read the article. You'll see it posted on my webpage. But Mark Gaffney has taken up the torch here and gone about some world travel where he has personally made measurements, done research, dug into archives, etc. It's a very wonderful work and brought that together. Now, just on this same note, back in the late 1990s, I took a trip myself to the Yucatan Peninsula, an area that I was familiar with from my youth when I lived in Mexico. I had visited there, but I went back in the late 1990s with survey equipment. I went to Chichen Itza and Uxmal and Tulum and a couple other locations, and what I discovered was that the Chichen Itza is 13.5 degrees off from true north, and Tulum and Uxmal, etc. And so what I did using those sites was a triangulation, and using the assumption, of course, was that these sites had been built on the old gridwork of ancient cities. It's like, let's take this as an example. Let's pretend that the streets of Manhattan Island are all north, south, east, and west, and perfectly on the grid system, the current grid system of our Earth. And say there was a big disaster, worldwide disaster, and then somebody came along later, thousands of years later, and built on the same street system, not knowing that there had been a pole shift. And that's the equivalent of what happened with the Mayas. The original Mayas go back to couple thousand BC when the actual pole shift occurred. And I'm not putting dates on anything but right now, but this is a very complicated topic. But the point was that I had certain data points, and I wrote that in my book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, I believe, and other locations in my work about the physical pole shifts. And Mark Gaffney has done remarkable work on other locations in the world. And this is not just archaeological sites. This has to do with reef structures, other kinds of data that have been anomalous data, mysterious data, etc. So Mark has written a paper, and it's the prelude to a larger work that's coming along in the form of a book. So anyway, with that said, just introducing that, go to my webpage, and I think it might be a good idea that I have Mark as a guest on my show one of these, maybe very soon, so we can discuss this at length. I think it'd be a very interesting topic for the public, because it is very clear that Earth did have a physical pole shift. And what's interesting now is a lot of people talk about the magnetic pole moving up towards the North Pole right now. It's moving back and forth. It kind of does a zigzag movement. But it's very clear that the magnetic pole should be aligned with the Earth's rotational pole, but it's not. And it's been migrating from its old location up to the current location of the North Pole. And then, of course, that goes for the South Pole, the South Magnetic Pole, wandering over towards the South Pole in the Antarctic at the South Pole. Okay, so given that, this is amazing new work, and it's just another one of those pieces in the puzzle. And, of course, they're not teaching any of this in school. The standard story that man developed in Mesopotamia, you know, 10,000 years ago and wandered around and came across the ice bridge at Alaska from Russia and, you know, populated the North American continent is hogwash. It couldn't possibly be true. It couldn't possibly. We know that there are Peruvian cities that had, you know, 40 million people along the coastline, you know, 10,000 years ago. The Earth was a totally different place. So there have been major disasters, major civilizations on planet Earth that have come and gone, not the least of which was Atlantis. But anyway, the work we're talking about now is very specific to taking very good data points and showing where the old North Pole really was. And Mark's conclusion is a little bit different than my conclusion. I concluded that the old North Pole was north of the state of Michigan in the state of Ontario, and Mark's conclusions puts it a bit north. But when you put my data and his data together, they come out to the same place. Anyway, you can see this in the data. But the point is, Mark has taken this particular topic and done an excellent job of surveying on many points around the world. And so it's a remarkable piece of work. And so I agreed to put this on my homepage for all to see. And like I say, this is a book that's coming down the road that'll go into far more detail. So go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. You'll find the link there and the posting on my page. And this, of course, will be a topic I'll be covering more in the future. And like I said, this is real science. This is real information that has been kept from the public throughout the history of man. These events are known to have happened. The Colburn, for example, is a good example of information that shows us that these major events caused by objects coming by Earth, not colliding with Earth, as NASA would like you to believe, that the only thing that could happen is an asteroid hitting Earth. No, that's not the case. The big objects that come by Earth, and there are many of them. There are many, many of them. Back in the 90s and into the early 2000s, the CIA put a tremendous amount of effort into creating the phony Planet X story with the crazy lady talks to aliens. That was all CIA crap. And then I came along, remember Mark Hazelwood came along and just blew them out of the water and brought some sanity into the topic. You had the, I won't even go through the laundry list, the 30 or so phony authors who all were supported by the CIA to bring craziness into that whole realm. Anyway, that's enough of that. But we have to start teaching kids real science, real history of planet Earth. And that's, by the way, why I'm doing my paid cast right now. If you're a parent, I recommend that you go sign up for my paid cast. It's $3.95 a month. Certainly a lot less than you're paying for that ridiculously bad public education out there. And I'm putting together the next 100 sessions are basically my education course for preschool, K-12, university. And a lot has already been done. A lot of homeschoolers are using my books as a basis for scientific information. So anyway, going on to tonight's main science topic on space radiation. Now, I have to laugh because, you know, supposedly, allegedly, six trips were made to the moon. That's a total of 18 astronauts who allegedly went to the moon and came back with no effect at all. And landed on the moon, came back. You know, of course, there was the Apollo 13 didn't make it, but of the 11 and beyond, there were six missions that where people actually went out through the radiation belts, etc., but with no cognizance that there was something there. So now there's a big push and a study on, in many private industry and in government circles, the NASA Living with a Star program, to try and understand space radiation. What they're realizing is that this is pretty dangerous stuff. Isn't that amazing? But why would you have to worry about it if 18 astronauts went to the moon, came back, lived to ripe old age, had no problems whatsoever, no eye problems, no nervous system problems, no endocrine system problems, you know, none at all. When I worked with the Russian scientists mid-1990s, they told me that they had sent men to the moon, to orbit the moon and come back, just as this is back in the early 60s, because they had the rockets, they had the propulsion, they had the spacecraft that could orbit Earth for long periods of time. So it was not a big deal just to push one out towards the moon, have it orbit the moon, come back. Not a big deal. And the cosmonauts came back very dead, as in severe radiation burn. And so the Russians never went back, and that's why they know that NASA never went to the moon. I don't know if I mentioned this. I mentioned this on, I think, the Power Hour last month. I'll be on next week with the Power Hour. Every second Wednesday of the month, I'm a guest on the Power Hour with Daniel Brigman, which is, he took over from Joyce Riley, who, of course, passed away a couple years ago. Wish Joyce were still back here. She did a tremendous amount of good work. But anyway, what I mentioned on the show is that I had an offer recently to be on Russian TV, and they specifically wanted me on Russian TV to talk about NASA during the 50th anniversary of NASA allegedly going to the moon. And I declined, because when I go on Russian TV, I want to talk about my work and positive things and things that I'm doing. And, you know, that it doesn't do anything for me to have to field the questions of, you know, the public. And by the way, nobody in Russia believes NASA went to the moon. That's, understood from a scientific point of view, not just a political point of view, the East against the West, the big bear, bad bear against the shining star of the West, you know, none of that political stuff. But anyway, I turned down the offer to be on Russian TV because, it, like I say, it doesn't do anything for me. It's like should be ancient history. But when I go on Russian TV or Japanese TV or other international TV, I want to talk about positive things, about things that are going on and progress that I'm making in the scientific world, etc. Okay, so going back to space radiation, I'm going to review a couple of articles here that talk about this. And just this occurred in a Space Daily, which is it's like a space rag online. And I want you to listen to the first opening line of this article. It appeared on yesterday by staff. It was written by staff. It comes from the European Space Agency out of Paris. And the European Space Agency is studying radiation impacts of hardware on humans, of hardware and humans. In other words, what does space radiation do to hardware and people? And I'll be talking about another one in a minute where they talk about solar panels being affected by solar radiation in the Van Allen belts. But listen to this first sentence here. This is a quote. This is from, like I say, the European Space Agency study on radiation impacts on hardware and humans. Here's the first sentence. There is little known about the effects of space radiation on the human body. Well, wait a minute. We had 18 guys that said they went to the moon. Well, you know, they never said they went to the moon. If you look on the interviews, none of the astronauts ever made a claim that they went to the moon. It was NASA saying that for them. But the whole issue, now I kind of went into a tirade a number of weeks ago on this show, that nobody's going to Mars. Nobody is going to Mars. You have these people having meetings and they're all going to go to Mars. No, nobody's going to Mars. But there's a real issue of space radiation. It's something that we are of tremendous shielding. We have many, many, many layers of shielding that block us from solar radiation, other forms of radiation, and even around in low Earth orbit, you are shielded from this radiation by the Van Allen belts are basically high radiation trapped in those belts. They're in a magnetic orbit. They're high energy particles, protons and electrons that are in orbit around Earth in Earth's magnetic field. So once again, the first sentence here, there is little known about the effects of space radiation on the human body. Then it goes on to say, astronauts cannot see or feel it, yet the high doses they are exposed to outside of Earth's cocoon pose health hazards for trips to the moon and Mars. To help investigate and find out more, European scientists can now accelerate atoms at close to the speed of light to learn how to protect astronauts. Okay. So it says space radiation passes through matter and penetrates the human body. Energetic particles impact living tissues, impairing normal function of cells and even killing them. An astronaut on a mission to Mars could receive radiation doses of up to 700 times higher than on planet Earth. This type of radiation is a major concern for space agencies. The constant shelling of cosmic rays could damage crews and jeopardize a mission. Well, once again, boys and girls, let's get some adults in the room here. And you had 18 guys who went to the moon, came back. All of them lived to ripe old ages, had no sign of physical problems at all whatsoever. So what is the big deal about? Now, okay, so I'm going to go to this other article now. Dealing with space radiation and solar panels, an interesting concept here. And by the way, on planet Earth, solar panels lose about 1% efficiency per year. That's the versions of solar panels that they're putting out there today. And you have to understand that most space probes are meant to last in that time range, maybe 5 to 10 years, something like that. So the solar panel degradation that they receive being in outer space is acceptable, and they're built for that. But somebody buying satellite solar panels for their house, for example, they really don't notice the subtle degradation over the, you know, a 5-10 year period, to the point that after 10 years, they're only putting out about 50% of what they did originally. But, okay, so what we're talking about in this article, however, is in outer space. Now, to save on weight on the launch, instead of using chemical propulsion to get satellites up to geosynchronous orbit, which means they're up at around 25,000 miles away from Earth in a geostationary orbit, these are typically communications or military or GPS satellites like that. And so these end up in an orbit, you know, about 25,000 miles away from Earth, so that they remain physically above the same spot on Earth as Earth turns around on its axis on a daily basis. So the radiation belts run from around, they can be as low as 150 miles from the surface of the Earth, very close, or they can be out, this is the inner edge of the Van Allen belts, could start out as far as 600 miles from Earth. They vary, they're variable. And they can extend out as far as maybe 12, 13,000 miles from Earth at the outer edge. There's two bands, there's the proton band in one direction, and there's the electron band in the other direction. Okay, so anyway, the issue here is with electric propulsion. In other words, ion engines burn very slowly. They have a slow specific impulse, which means they work over a very long period of time to achieve the same amount of thrust, the same amount of work as a chemical rocket achieves in a very short burn with a high specific impulse. In other words, they both end up getting the job done of getting the satellite out to a 25,000-mile orbit in geostationary orbit. But the electron ion, the electric ion type of engine takes a long time. It can take up to a year, which means that the solar panels are, and other sensitive electronics on the satellite can spend up to a year in the Van Allen belts. And so the European Space Agency is testing the degradation. It's actually some of the studies coming from a group in England, but that study radiation, by the way, at the South Pole, which has a very similar problem. Remember, at the South Pole in Antarctica a number of years ago, there was a solar storm, and there was a very high influx of radiation coming in. They can come in parallel along the magnetic field lines. And by the way, that's the same effect that causes auroras around the North and South Pole. But the radiation coming in, the high energy particles, hit metal and other, basically metal in the environment of the scientists, and they all got cancer. They got severe cancer. There's one story where a woman physician, because they couldn't get down there to get them out, they had to fly a plane in, because they were supposed to be there like all winter. Well, they had to fly an airplane down there to save these people and get them out. A couple hundred scientists, from what I understand, but there was a plane load of them. They had to get out of there right away. But this woman did surgery on herself to cut a big tumor off of her upper chest over by her shoulder. It was about the size of a tennis ball, and she had to cut it off herself. Because, you know, she was a doctor and did self-surgery, but it was the result of radiation. And now let me just quickly explain this, and then I'm going to go to an article where NASA claims they knew all about this in the 1960s, and they shot the astronauts through there just fine. Everybody was just great. But the problem is, number one, NASA did not have studies in the 1960s. They're lying about that. And secondly, the Van Allen belts change constantly. Sometimes they come in, sometimes they go out, sometimes they're very active, sometimes they're very dense, sometimes they're very sparse. And NASA did not have that kind of data available at that time. Simply, they knew that they were up there. That's all they knew. So I just saw an article where NASA is making this claim about how they did all of this study, and the astronauts went through there, and they went through quickly, and there was no problem at all. Well, if there was no problem, it begs the question again. Why is everybody studying this now? Why is everybody making a claim that space radiation is a problem? You know, it doesn't, no matter how many lies they band-aids they put on the other band-aids to cover up the band-aids of the gushing wound that is NASA claims, that just doesn't wash. So at any rate, here's another study, independent study, dealing with hardware on spacecraft, spending considerable time in the Van Allen belts before they get up to geosynchronous orbit, which is outside of the Van Allen belts. And the degradation can be up as much as 8 to 10% just by spending a bit extra time in the Van Allen belts, where with a chemical burn, you can get up to geosynchronous orbit very quickly in a matter of a couple days, or even less, actually, a few hours when you do a chemical burn. They're typically very short. And so the idea is that with electric ion propulsion, spending that additional time in the Van Allen belts is very damaging to the equipment. And then they go on to explain why that is, because the particles, the high-energy particles, are hitting and causing damage. But the thing that nobody talks about in any of these articles is the real issue, and this is basic physics. When the charged particles, the electrons, or the protons hit metal, which is throughout the electronics, throughout the spacecraft, when they hit metal, they create X-rays. And it's the X-ray radiation that is the problem. And when you look at, say, radiation from, around like Chernobyl or something like that, there's a movie out called Chernobyl now where they talk about severe radiation burn. And I watched part of it. I'm not real big on movies like that, but they show people that had severe radiation burn in a short amount of time and the damage that it does to the human body. But part of it is the high energy particles that come out of, like, say, cesium and uranium and other plutonium that are in the reactors. But it's also due to the X-rays that are caused when those high energy particles hit something metal, which, of course, around a reactor, there's a lot of that. And extremely damaging to the human body. And that is exactly what the Russian scientists described relative to their cosmonauts going to the moon in the early 1960s. So let me go and talk a little bit about space radiation in general. It's one of the main issues why people cannot go to, say, that our technology, let me put it this way, our technology is nowhere at the point where we could send people to a mission to the moon or to Mars without knowing about this. The other thing about the Apollo astronauts, something I followed because I happened to be in college in those years in physics, and we had all of the manuals of NASA. And their radiation belts of the astronauts, I can tell you this because this I learned myself in the early 1960s from the NASA manuals, the radiation badges that the astronauts wore were alpha and beta particles only. They did not have X-ray detectors. They did not have high energy, like, say, gamma ray or cosmic ray detectors. They were simply alpha and beta particle detectors, low energy radiation, because they did not know, in spite of their claims now, their retro claims of knowing all about this and doing a good job and claiming that James Van Allen was in the project, which he's dead now, so he can't talk for himself. They create these stories just like they did for decades with Stephen Hawking's. A guy who they claim just died last year. I think Stephen Hawking died probably decades ago. And what they were putting up of him sitting in his wheelchair, was not Stephen Hawking's. And then they made the claim that they buried him next to Newton in London or whatever, wherever that is. Stephen Hawking died decades ago. In fact, if you remember when I released my book, The Diamond Principle, they had a guy who claimed he was writing a book with Stephen Hawking's. And of course, the main point of my book, The Diamond Principle, was that there is a divine creator. There is a design in the universe. And that's actually what Stephen Hawking said in his last book. Actually, the last book that we know he wrote. But these ghostwriters that claim that they could, he was the only people that could talk to Stephen Hawking's, wrote a book changing that theme of Stephen Hawking's. Then claiming, oh, Stephen Hawking was an atheist. He didn't believe in God or a designer. No, that's not true. In his last book, on the last page, Stephen Hawking stated that as scientists, if we can discover just a fact of the universe, it's like a way of honoring the creator. It's discovering something of the grand design. And those were his words. And then after he became immobile, and I believe at that point he was dead, when my book, The Diamond Principle, came out, it was, I forget the year, maybe in the mid-2000s, when that book came out, Stephen Hawking had been dead for a long time. But a guy came on, this was basically got bushwhacked on the Coast to Coast AM show. They put, Howard Bloom on with me, which is something you don't do. You don't bushwhack a guy who's releasing his book, which was me, and stick some other NASA mouthpiece yo-yo on the show with me. And, of course, he was trying to praise the space program and all the wonderful things they did. And I had to tear into him on that show and tell him, look, you know, you're full of it, mister. But they, you know, that was a way of trying to sideswipe my work. And then at the same time coming out with a book allegedly by Stephen Hawking. That's how much they were worried about my book, The Diamond Principle. So something you should read. Everybody should read all of my books. But just a little historical note. One of the hundreds, if not thousands, of events that happened during my career where they tried to sideswipe me and my work. Anyway, getting back to the idea of space radiation, it is one of the biggest dilemmas facing anybody trying to go into space today. Just because you can have a big rocket doesn't mean you can go to Mars. Just because you can land a rocket on a pad doesn't mean you can go to Mars. Just because you have hardware, robotics, doesn't mean you can go to Mars with people. And that's the issue. The whole issue is radiation. And simply put, nobody in the scientific world really understands radiation. I talk about that in my weather book, how there are 17 electrical batteries around planet Earth, and they're all capable of producing severe radiation. Not just the Van Allen belts, there's 17 other electrical batteries. And they can change depending on solar conditions. So that's one of the lies also of NASA, is that they somehow knew where the Van Allen belts were, and then they planned. Because their launch dates, the Apollo launch dates, were pre-planned for years in advance. It's not like it was related to where the Van Allen belts happened to be that day. They had many, many, many things to consider in going into orbit around Earth and then trying to launch from there towards the moon and having it all work out. You know, not the least of which was having the moon cooperate, where the daytime side of Earth, the side of the moon that was facing the sun, was where they landed. Wouldn't do much good for the astronauts to land on the dark side of the moon. And remember that the side of the Earth that faces Earth, that's can be completely dark. So that all of these things had timing to them. And so it's not like NASA now claims, oh yeah, we planned on a certain date for the launch of Apollo so that there would be minimal amount of Van Allen belt of radiation. That's hogwash. Those dates were planned on where the moon was, where the Earth was in its orbit, etc. Even though, you know, going to the moon and sending people out in through the Van Allen belts was a different story. Something that I'll just say also is that the astronauts that you saw come back down to Earth and, you know, one small step for mankind, all that stuff, that was all fakery, of course. But the other issue is that they would never have sent the main three astronauts to go to the moon, because if it failed, you know, it would be very obvious. So if they did send somebody out there who got French fried or whatever else happened, may have happened to those people, they didn't send the main astronauts to the moon. And that's why when you interview anybody of these people or try and contact them, none of these people have ever had an interview or have been ever asked real questions by real people that had a real interest in finding out what really happened there or what didn't happen. But tonight I wanted to discuss these other issues going on where people, the European Space Station is actually studying the issue of people going into outer space and space radiation. Okay, so I'm going to wrap this show up by once again telling you to have a great, great 4th of July. And here's something, too. A lot of people, you might have family members or relatives over that have never heard my show before. Tell them how to listen. Tell them to go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. Tell them that I have the best water filter products in the world. Tell them about the wing generator. Tell them about my books, etc. And the paid cast, which is for people to educate their kids with real science, putting together a real educational program where we get back the real mathematics, real science, and reasoning, logic, etc., things that are totally devoid from school today. So anyway, all of that available on my webpage, jmccsci.com. Have a very wonderful 4th of July, and there's so many positive things going on. That's what I concentrate on. There are ways to go into outer space, but I think we should learn to live on this planet first. I'll be honest with you. There was a study done on the money spent on the Apollo program. If they took the money of the Apollo program and applied it to planet Earth, it would have fed like the poor people of the country for a decade. Just an incredible amount of money wasted. So we'll talk to you next week. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.